12:23, and it's a Wednesday, and you know what that means. Time to talk to our friend Andy Hart of WEEI.com and slumming it just with us on the phone today. Hart, good morning, good afternoon, I should say.
Good afternoon, fellas. What's happening?
Are you drafting Bronny James, number 30 overall? Come on, I know you are.
Nope, I want nothing to do with LeBron James, Bronny James, any James. Nope. Nothing. No, thank you. Drama. And when did the NBA draft decide they were like the NFL and now worthy of multiple nights? Like, what are we doing here?
Oh, well, no. That's not true.
It's because of, it is.
I know it's multiple nights, but they don't think that they're the NFL.
No, but I think there's this like almost renewed push, Hart, I think, for like, hey, the second round matters too, because these are the guys that are the real, you know, these are real prospects that you're not financially tied to. It's a mixed message of the whole, yeah, there are 60 guys that might be able to come into the NBA. We just don't want to pay half of them. So therefore, the second round has become a thing.
Yeah, and like a couple of them will be good in a few years, and most of them will forget about in a few years. It's sort of like everybody that believes, I can get a great quarterback in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. Yeah, you can. It's not likely. You can. And you might end up with a good player in the second round, or 27 teams might end up with a guy that sits at the end of the bench for a couple of years, and then we never hear from again.
Yeah, you know that the draft is weak for the NBA, one, just by the way the calendar falls and the fact that they're doing it right after the NBA Finals. Nobody's even paying attention to it. And there's too many international players nobody knows about. And the fact that Bronny James is like the number one storyline shows you that this draft and anybody willing to watch it is weak because they're trying to convince you to watch, right?
Yep.
They're trying to convince you to watch. Something is going to happen, but it isn't.
They're trying to sell me. They're trying to hype it. They're trying to market, and it's not really working with me. I will not spend a single second watching it. I have less than zero interest. I had more interest in the WNBA draft, and I knew exactly who was going number one overall, but at least they had star power and somebody I had sort of an attachment to, multiple players. I knew more about the prospects between South Carolina, LSU, Iowa, UConn. I knew more about the prospects in the WNBA draft than I do the NBA draft. And maybe that says more about me than them. I don't know. But to me, that's – and look at what they've done. Are they going to – are any of the guys that are going to play, come into the league tonight, going to have the kind of impact that Reese and Caitlin Clark have had on the WNBA, where they're both like – double-double machines, leading their teams, they're the most watched games, they're already building the rivalry. Like, no, the stars of the basketball world currently reside in the WNBA.
Yeah, it's interesting because there might be some of those guys, but we don't know them, to your point.
No, because and I don't even know that they're, like, do you have any confidence that any of these guys will be rookie stars? Like, if I made you pick one and said, I need you to put a month's salary on one of these players being a rookie star, would you do it?
If I knew he went to the right team, I would, because of the Providence College influence. I might bet on Devin Clark. Devin Carter. His old man played in the league. He's got a lot of skills that translate already to the NBA. And he likes to play defense. So you're at least going to get out there if you can go show that end. But Hart, I'm kind of with you. It's almost like for some, it's like throwing darts. For some, now we have some. Apparently, we have a couple of well-educated Twitch chatters in here who know all about the Zachariah, whatever his name is, who might go number one or something like that. But to your point, the WNBA draft was much more well known. Let me ask you this though, Hart: the WNBA numbers have held with Caitlin Clark. Not so much with Angel Reese, but they did with Caitlin Clark. Is the WNBA now a little bit of a ratings disruptor for someone like Major League Baseball? Now that they've actually kind of proven for a chunk of games that they've been able to hold some audience.
Absolutely. And I've watched a bunch of games. I've been interested in games. I did something I joked the other day that I never thought I'd do. I pushed that little button on my remote and said, WNBA, and it popped up on my screen where to go to watch the WNBA game that was on. Now, what kind of legs does it have? What is the cap? What do they call it? Large cap, small cap, and stocks. What's the large cap opportunity here for the WNBA? How big, how far can it go?
Like, it's really connected to the size of companies, but okay.
Right. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
How big is it going to get? I don't know that it can, Because all we hear about all these sports, and I know you guys are like me and sometimes roll your eyes, whether it's soccer, WNBA, I'm a lacrosse guy, the PLL, like fastest growing sport in America and all these things. And yeah, that's true, because if you go from one to two, you doubled, and so you beat everybody else. But really, what share of the audience can you eventually eat away at, and eat away at the audience that's going to other places, because there's limited, you know, limited eyeballs. And I'm interested in the WNBA. I've been watching it, and Christian, I know you're the father of a female basketball player, so you might be a little biased, but I feel like Christian and I probably would have been in the world of make fun of the WNBA like 10 years ago, and now don't. And I think that's gross. Like, that's good for them. That's
yeah.
Gross.
I think Billy's where we probably would have been 10 years ago. He's still, and I'll tell you what, sometimes the product is horrible. Like, I'll just tell you, like, sometimes the games are so bad. And yep. Sometimes when it's got some juice to it, like Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, they're a little bit more fun. I would say, and I've been watching them all because I'm forced to. But the other thing I was thinking of is just overall, this time of year with the Patriots, right? The hay is in the barn. You know, all the hard work has been done. The rookie training is almost over. Those guys are going to be out of there, I think, in the next couple days for 4th of July weekend. Coaches are taking a vacation. Like, if you're Gerard Mayo, like, what are you kind of focused on right now? Is it just rest and relaxation? Or are you still kind of obsessing about how to be a collaborator?
No, I mean, if you take him at his word, and I think we all try to do that, especially in new relationships. He actually said at minicamp that he was all in then, but when he gets away, he's going to be all in on family, all in on getting away and investing in the family, because when he returns and when it starts to head toward training camp, then he's got to be all in for football again and moving forward through the grind that is August and September straight on through. So, no, I think he is probably, and I think that's, you know, that's probably a struggle. And, you know, he likes to point out his business experiences. I think that's a struggle for businessmen, right? They take vacation a couple weeks with the family, but the cell phone, the laptop, everything is always around. I think he's going to do his best to get away. And let's be honest, I think his lot in life is, in a weird way, makes that easier. Like, we know this is not going to be a great season. He knows he's not one player away from winning the Super Bowl or one mistake away during this period. I think it was Parcells used to always talk about worrying this time of year about one guy doing something stupid when they get away from you. Like, okay, let's just say one guy does something stupid. What does that mean? The Patriots are going to pick third instead of fourth, second instead of third. Like, you know, barring a ridiculous mistake by a player, it is what it is. This is a team that has more questions than answers, both in terms of talent and coaching. So I do think he'll probably disconnect, because I think he's probably somewhat realistic about the opportunities and struggles that are ahead of him.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the whole, the idea of wanting to get away and focus on family, because I just think about all the times that Bill was on probably his vacation and somebody had to call him and tell him, okay, this accident happened, this guy hurt himself here, or this player is now available. So even if you want to, like, ignore your cell phone, like, this is like the learning experience where he really understands that this is a 24-hour-a-day job, regardless of what time of year it is.
Right. And I don't think people understand that. I probably don't even understand it. You're probably a little more privy. Like, I've heard plenty of stories, things that never got out about minor accidents and altercations with the cops and whatever that go across a head coach's desk. And that could be 11:45 on a Wednesday night. It could be 3 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. Who knows? It could be any time. And, yeah, I mean, all of this. And that's the one thing I know Gresh pushes back on, that he's maybe a little too honest, Mayo, about his greenness in the head coaching world. But I will say, maybe just as being a player and a captain, maybe he's somewhat loosely aware of that 24-hour availability or responsibility that he has, and that will continue to show itself. And who knows? Maybe he'll get lucky, and maybe he'll make it through his first late June, early July, early August, and not get any of those phone calls, but probably not.
Andy Hart at WEEI.com is here with Gresham for you. We were talking a little bit yesterday about how it could get a little sticky, maybe, for Jerod Mayo in trying to handle this situation with Devon Godshaw. Number one, I'm curious for your thoughts on Godshaw and the way he's handling this. And then is the, and I was going through this with Fourier yesterday, is the head coach, how does he handle it? Because it's the, you know, we nurture people, we hug people, we develop people. But is Jerod Mayo going to be the guy to look at Devon and say, no, you're not worth the money?
Well, if he doesn't want to do it, I'd be happy to do it for him because he's not worth the money that he's asking for. And I really don't know who Devon Godshaw thinks he is in terms of importance to the team. Like, he's a good, solid defensive tackle who plays the run. That's great. And on a better team, might be more valuable. On a team 20 years ago, might be even more valuable. Like the 03-04 Patriots that were chasing Ted Washington and Keith Traylor, because that was like the one weakness on an overall dynastic defense. Okay. Again, it's sort of like I said earlier. How many games are you going to win with Devon Godshaw? Five? How many games are you going to win without him?
He's just taking his cue from the defensive leader last year.
Well, yeah, but the difference is position. Kind of like when OBJ wanted to be paid like a quarterback, and whoever the Giants GM at the time was said, then play quarterback. You're not a quarterback. Guess what? Devon Godshaw, you're not a pass rusher. Pass rushers get paid in the NFL. Defensive tackles don't. I think a lot of us believed he was overpaid when Bill Belichick signed him once and then re-signed him and called him one of the best defensive tackles in football. I would love to have the confidence and that Devon Godshaw has in himself, or that his agents have instilled in him, because he just I don't really understand it personally. And again, the team matters. Like the status of the team matters. So him sort of pushing, using his leverage like he's Ted Washington circa 03-04, really makes no sense to me. But I did think it was interesting when Mayo kind of brought up, when asked about Godshaw and what he was doing, you know, like everybody wants a new contract and everybody gets a raise. And, you know, I've had to learn that, you know, values and those are the things that you would have thought Mayo's more prepared for as a player, because he had a value. He thought he was worth something. He got a nice extension from the Patriots, and maybe that's what it was. Maybe he never really had to go through the hardships of fighting for every penny the way a Danny Amendola or a Julian Edelman or some of these guys have. But I do think the way he talked about it, that's another one of those aspects of 24/7, 365 that he probably arrived at minicamp and said, wait, what? Godshaw's not going on the field. Why? Well, wait, what does he want? How much does he want? Like, I think that probably caught him off guard, and that is an example of his learning on the job here.
Yeah, so we're talking to Andy Harden. Andy, I like the idea. I think Jerod is in, like, the perfect situation as far as giving somebody bad news, because it's not like Bill, who is wearing two hats and coming at you and you're, you know, telling you bad news, but also as your head coach, who's trying to hopefully, you know, you can do what he asks you to do. He can be the good cop. No matter what happens, mm-hmm. all he has to say is, you know, listen, I'm not in charge of that. You know, I feel like he's in a great position that most coaches would kind of, you know, be jealous of.
Yeah, I do. And I think that's why you see most teams, for a variety of reasons, are more set up with a GM head coach model. They work together, but it's not one hat or, you know, one guy doing all the jobs. And I do think it makes the job of the coach easier, because you're right. It's kind of weird. Okay, you're going to talk me up, fluff me up, work with this confidence. Oh, I've done a great job improving in these areas and whatever. And then tell me I'm not worth the money I'm asking for. Tell me what I suck at, you know, why I can't get a raise, why I'm not worth an extension, even though you've been handing out extensions like candy this offseason. I think that definitely makes Jerod's job a little easier. But again, I also, Christian, I would turn it on you. Like, the self-awareness of a player, is that like a weird area? Like, did you play with a lot of guys that you're like, that guy's asking for how much? Has he watched his own tape? Like, because Devon Godshaw, like, I've heard numbers thrown around for him, like, oh, he wants to, like, double his salary and double his cap. Like, why?
It is funny.
Like, think he is?
So you're right. I do think that's why you got to be careful. Like, Bill's the problem with this. Bill propped him up and, you know, talked about him so well that he believes it. And he has probably an inflated opinion of his worth.
Plus, the guy also watches the people now running the front office that were a part of giving another guy a whole butt ton of money last year. And it's the whole, oh, if it's good for him, it's good for me. Whether they're delusional or not, the expectation, or at least the precedent, has already been set, which is why, Hart, I brought up the whole, would Mayo actually look at the guy and say, no, you're not worth it, or just pass the buck to somebody upstairs? Because if I'm Godshaw, I look at the head coach and say, you were the de facto defensive coordinator. You know how good I am. Go battle for me. Then what does Jerod say to the player?
Well, I do think it's an opportunity for Jerod to establish his style. Like, you guys know, I go with the truth is never mean. Like, I think sometimes the truth is just the easiest course. And I think this would be a chance for Jerod to sit down and say, listen, as a former middle linebacker, inside linebacker, I know a little something about devalued positions and position, you know, the value in the game changing based on the way the game is played. I've appreciated everything you've done for me as a defensive coach, but as you put together teams based on value, you have an inflated view of yourself, and we'd love for you to be a part of this team, but if you're really willing to push the point, we're also willing to go in a different direction, because we're playing football in the year 2024, and you're thinking about football in the year 2004. And I just, to me, honesty is the best approach. It just always is the best approach, especially for Jerod. As you said, Christian, even has that one layer of removal. He doesn't have to be mean. Truth is never mean, but he doesn't have to be mean. But you can be probably brutally honest and say, listen, I don't even make these decisions around here. That's Elliot's side of the office. But this is why. And we appreciate what you've done, but we also understand you maybe think you're bigger and better than this place. And if so, then maybe we have to go in separate directions.
All right, Andy Hart.
So we won't talk to you next week. It's 4th of July. We just realized it's 4th of July, a week from today. Right?
Yeah.
So plans for you.
Right? A week from today, July 3rd.
Oh, July, a week from tomorrow. Thank you.
Okay, well,
but we won't be here on that. We won't be here that day, right? Oh, no, I won't.
Either. I won't either.
Sorry. You won't either. Neither will I. Faye, you know what? Have a great day. We got other stuff to do.
Yeah, that was about 30 seconds of verbal dung right there. Just
all right. Hey, you know what?
Which way are we going here? Are we up, down, all around?
I wanted to wish him a happy 4th of July. And we won't talk to him for a while.
Next week, it's August.
August can't get here quick enough.
I mean, ask Fourier if it's going to rain today. He has no idea. Anyway.
Yes.
He's confused.
Because I'm going to a concert. It will rain.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, are you?
I bought a poncho today.
Yeah, hey, Fourier said he'll be wearing overalls
with no shirt.
With no shirt to this concert tonight, whatever it is.
What concert are you going to?
Zach Bryan.
Oh, I like Zach Bryan.
Right?
Yeah, my son's going, not to this one. My son's going to the next one. But yeah, no, I kind of like, he's grown on me. That Pink Skies song has hooked me, the harmonica.
Yeah, me too.
So this guy's what, country John Popper?
A little bit of modern country, not really old school, but they're complaining about the same things all the older other guys complained about. It's just new age.
Right.
They're all bitching about the same dogs and women and too much alcohol and partying and all that same stuff.
Just, yeah, it's called life.
It's just modernized.
There you go. That's what it is. It's modernized. There's no silos from the work
no
through
silos
down there anymore. All right, Hart, we'll see you, buddy. Thank you. Talk to you next week.
Bye, buddy.
See you, guys.
See you.